From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
East Bay, El Cerrito.
West Oakland.
Richmond, California.
I live in Oakland, California. How you doing?
Today on the show, we're looking at how people deal with especially challenging realities. First, a teacher drops the textbooks to focus on helping his students survive.
It's tough to give a kid an A in math at 13 and go to his funeral when he's 19.
Then we visit a local living room where Jews and Palestinians sit and talk candidly.
I mean, dialogue, it's applicable in our daily life. If we could only use it, we will be better people.
And we find some beauty in San Francisco's Tenderloin District.
We went through 100 reels of tape in the Crosby session. He didn't care. Tape is cheap. Magic is not.
Stay with us. In 2011, that's the most recent year we have data for, about 82% of San Francisco's students graduated high school. 10% dropped out. Break it down by ethnic group, and the numbers change in uncomfortable ways. For example, just 62% of the city's African-American students graduated, and nearly 20% dropped out. The numbers for Latino students are similar. Kids need education and support, but resources are increasingly scarce. So often in cities like San Francisco, nonprofits step in. Resources for those organizations are limited too, but it helps to be able to show pretty much constant success. This year, San Francisco's Omega Boys Club celebrates its 25th anniversary. And don't be fooled by the name. It spent that quarter century helping local boys and girls get out of bad neighborhoods and into different mindsets. They try to be there for kids, whether they're on site or far away.
Street Soldiers, Alive and Free Radio. Good evening, everyone. It is the post-Thanksgiving Street Soldiers. We are here to keep you alive and free one more Sunday. Good advice, good information, good example, good instruction, all to make it good in your neighborhood.
That's Joe Marshall, the Boys Club founder, speaking on the group's weekly national radio show. He told KALW's Leela Day that getting kids into college is a priority, but what he just said then about keeping them alive and free is a bigger one. Here's Leela.
Back in 1982, Joe Marshall was teaching at Woodrow Wilson High School on the southeast side of San Francisco. He thought he was pretty good at it, and by academic measures, he was. Then he realized that in a school serving low-income families, that wasn't enough.
They were getting A's in math but F's in life, and it's tough to give a kid an A in math at 13 and go to his funeral when he's 19.
Because in a minute, you're going to be challenged. And you need to be ready. When you leave here and you get back on the island.
When they got to high school, I get these horror stories about my former students. Everything from them ending up on drugs to them being in jail, being pregnant. But the worst thing was having to go to the funeral of a former student who was killed in some sort of drug or gang-related incident.
Have you ever been looked at and nobody really saw you? Yeah, you know what it's like to be invisible. Where they just walk right by and act like you don't exist. That doesn't happen here. I see you.
Had I known, you know, maybe more, maybe I could have done more.
Marshall started to reflect on his own path. He'd grown up in St. Louis and then South Central L.A. He saw less than half of his African-American peers graduating from high school within 4 years. He had bucked the trend. Went to college at the University of San Francisco, became an advocate for civil rights. But it wasn't until he traveled to historically black colleges in the South that he found rooms full of African-American role models.
And it was the same way for me. I saw these young men. They were 18, 19, 20 years old, 21 years old, aspiring to be lawyers and doctors. And so it showed me that, wow, black men are way more than just thugs and non-serious students and athletes. And so it was great. I mean, I flourished.
Welcome to Omega. This is how it works. This is what it's all about. So I'm coming to you.
Marshall founded the Omega Boys Club with a fellow teacher, Jack Jackwa, in 1987. It serves both boys and girls in an after-school program that offers academic tutoring and trains kids to stay off the streets.
Here at Omega, we will teach you the rules for living. We call them the rules for living, rules to live by. But we're letting you know that if you obey these rules, the chances of you staying alive and free and educated is if you follow these rules. So the first rule is...
But Marshall says the program was not an immediate success.
The early kids I sent off to college, they did not do well, but they were not adequately prepared for college. This young man that wanted to go to college, he was a gang member, very smart. He wanted to change his life and said that, Dr. Marshall, I want to go to school. So I brought him here, I prepared him, put him on a plane, sent him down to school. He sold drugs on the college campus.
In 1990, only 28% of African Americans who went to college got their degrees. Marshall realized the same problems were following many of them out of their neighborhoods.
These young people get infected with a way of thinking. It's really sad because you know when this thing has a virus, they're walking around thinking they're okay. They just think it's bad luck. No, they've been programmed that way.
Programmed to fail. Once again, Marshall decided he could do more.
He asked me a question. How was I doing in school?
Andre Akins lived in Oakland, where he was a good high school student. But he says for that very reason, kids jumped him, stole his money, and made fun of him on the regular. He fought back, got into selling drugs, started ditching school. He remembers meeting Joe Marshall for the first time when Omega visited a gym filled with flunking kids.
And I said, man, I'm only here for a driver's license. You must have thought I called him an MF or called his mama a name or something because he went off. He went ballistic. And his whole thing was, how can you think so little of education when so many have given up everything to give you the opportunity to learn how to read, write, and do math, something that's your born given right and that was kept from you for a number of years. And now you're freely not taking advantage of it.
That reached him. A week later, Akins was at the Omega Boys Club taking classes and focusing on his high school diploma. He got it and then headed south to Grambling University.
I can remember this guy walked past me and said, "What's up?" And I'm used to "what's up" meaning it's on for a confrontation. So I'm posturing from that. And he like, "I'm just saying hi." It blew my mind that people say hi to people just because it was just greeting strangers. This was something I was not used to. It was like I'm stepping into a whole nother universe.
A recent report by the Education Trust found that more African Americans succeed at colleges that engage both their academic and social lives at schools that identify dropout risks early. Support systems, it found, are just as important in higher education as they are in secondary school, where the Omega Boys Club began caring for Andre Akins.
After Grambling, became a math teacher in Oakland, became an assistant principal. Full circle, I became the operations manager here.
The next rule is, a friend will never lead me to danger.
By 2010, for the first time, more than half of African Americans entering high school got their diploma within 4 years. It still lags far behind the rate for their white peers, who graduate at a 78% rate. But it's progress. Since 1987, the Omega Boys Club has helped more than 160 students graduate from high school. It's become a model for similar programs around the country and abroad, including Haiti, Thailand, and South Africa. And still, Joe Marshall believes he can do more.
I'm really excited about training more people and making more doctors of the Alive and Free prescription. And I'm really, really excited about that. There are people out there who want to help young people just like me. I want to find them and train them so they can help young people where they are.
At the Omega Boys Club in San Francisco, I'm Leela Day for Cross Currents.
KALW's Jen Cheehan contributed to that report. So what programs changed your life? Tell us about them by leaving us a message at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and we might get you on the air. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. What you're about to hear is a news report from BBC Radio, broadcast live a few weeks ago from the Palestinian city of Gaza.
On a bus and calling it a martyrdom operation. Now, we don't think that this was a suicide bomb attack, but certainly that's what we were saying.
Three, two, four. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
John, are you all right?
About, yeah.
That was one of the many airstrikes launched by Israel in Gaza City over the past few weeks in response to Palestinian rocket attacks on Israeli cities. Since that moment, the violence in the region has subsided after a ceasefire. The Palestinians made a successful bid to upgrade their UN status, and Israel announced it would start building 3,000 new settlements in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem. So the situation remains as tense and volatile as ever. A model for breaking through the belligerence is taking place right here in the Bay Area, in a sleepy neighborhood in San Mateo. For the past 20 years, Len Traubman has hosted the Jewish-Palestinian Dialogue right in his living room. Every month, Bay Area Jews and Palestinians come to meet, have coffee, and listen to one another. Palestinian Elias Boto started coming over a decade ago, and he's been friends with Traubman ever since. The two men invited me to the Traubman living room to see how their dialogue works in this piece from our archives.
The present conflicted relationship in the Middle East is about 60 years old, the serious part of it. There were in the previous decades some, but the real history of our relationship is the better part of 1,000 years. In Spain, under Muslim rule, Jews and Christians and Muslims flowered together, and they actually seeded the whole European Renaissance and Enlightenment. And without us living together for that better part of a millennium, which is really our much greater history, the world would be very different.
Elias, do you feel that it is realistic to think that Arabs and Jews might be able to coexist in the way they did in the time of Andalusia in Spain? Is that realistic at this point?
Anna, we don't have to go to the Andalusia time and the Granada. I'm a testament to that. I lived in Palestine under the British mandate as a Christian Palestinian with Jews and Muslims. My classmates in high school before 1947, they were Jews, Christians, and Muslims. We played together, we ate together, we cried together, we did everything together. There was no distinction. We walked the same street together. There was no discrimination, no segregation between us when it was British mandate.
So tell me a little bit about your Holy Land School project over here, where you raised equal amounts of money for a school in Ramallah, Palestine, and in Netanya, Israel. Mm-hmm. You said you got Arabs to donate mm-hmm. equally for both, and you got Jewish people to donate equally for both. What was that process like?
Oh, we learned a lot about ourselves, about each other, how we raise money differently. Jews were very organized. They wrote, they planned and wrote very nice letters with return envelopes to all of their friends. And the Palestinians do it in another amazing way.
What's that?
Elias can describe that.
Well, I don't know how to describe it. They just dig in their pockets and give you the money.
Yeah, they just have they just open their living rooms and have people come in. They have a fabulous food that goes about halfway to the ceiling, and they just walk around and ask people to get money out of their pockets.
Like
and one night they raised like $5,000 in one living room doing that, and the Jews took weeks to do it the long way.
With the self-addressed stamped envelopes.
So wow. We both know how, and you know, it's a good example of learning from one another. And though we don't do things the same way, if the vision is shared, the outcome is good. And like war itself, the means determine the end. And if you're going to use violence, it's the predictable failure. And if you're going to begin with dialogue and get creative, it builds a predictable Middle East and global community.
Okay, let's go around over here. And you have You have a toy camel in the living room, but it's expressing something. What is that?
Well, it has the Palestinian flag and the Israeli flag. I mean, meaning no matter where you travel, they're always together. Whether it's in the desert or whether it's in the Arabian Peninsula, they are together, the Palestinian and the Israeli flag.
And the camel has a name. Camelot. Camelot. Oh, that's it. That's what it looks like.
That's our Camelot.
It looks like you've become more than co-participants in a dialogue, you and Elias. This looks like friendship. So how do you see Elias, Len?
It's a little emotional. Life would be very different without Elias. And I don't know how he came into my life, but we spend a lot of time together listening to one another and reaching out to one another, having disagreements. But without Elias, I'd have nothing to say. And the fact of his vision of a shared future and his willingness to put himself on the line and take criticism even from his own people for stepping into a room and being called naive or idealistic or weak or whatever. I'm sure I don't even know half of what he hears from his own community. Probably has lost some friends because of it. I mean, this is a man with courage and a beautiful Palestinian, and all I can say is I'm really grateful.
Well, if you ask me what's in it for me, I'm much richer being in the dialogue group and being neighbors to the Traubmans. And the most important thing, it's not just being in a dialogue with the Traubmans. We do socialize together. And dialogue helped me in many, many ways in my private life, not strictly by dealing with the Jews and Palestinians. I mean, dialogue, it's something, it's applicable in our daily lives. If we could only practice it and use it, we will be better people and the world will be in a better situation the way it is.
The Jewish-Palestinian Living Room Dialogue is still going strong and celebrating 20 years. Join the discussion on our Facebook page. We're KALW News. That's also where you can find a link to a documentary about the Living Room Dialogue. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Sometimes just talking is enough to bring people together. Sometimes you need a bit more, something nonverbal, emotional, that quite literally strikes a chord. San Francisco is a city built on rock and roll. In the 1960s, Janis Joplin, Big Brother and the Holding Company, Jefferson Airplane, Quicksilver Messenger Service, and the Grateful Dead created the sound of the city and an era. In the segment of Witness to History, recording engineer Stephen Barncard tells KALW's Angela Johnston why his best memories of San Francisco's music scene started in the Tenderloin.
In 1969, Stephen Barncard's first visit to San Francisco ended with a spontaneous visit to the Fillmore West.
I'd never seen the Grateful Dead live before. I thought their records really were terrible sounding. So I wasn't necessarily a fan of the band until I heard them live. And I saw this groovy guy up in the with a beard up there on the stage, and I saw the magic carpet lift off the stage, and I wasn't high or anything. It was a pure magic thing. But I never figured I'd be working with them.
The Dead concert drew Barnhart out of his native Missouri and back to California less than a year later. He knew he wanted to work in San Francisco, so when he touched down for the second time, he got up
and started walking around the city without much of a plan. We went to a phone booth and looked up recording studios, and there was Wally Heider recording on Hyde Street.
Wally Heider was a big name in the San Francisco recording scene of the 60s and 70s. He cut Woody Herman, The Who, Jimi Hendrix. Barnhart didn't have much recording experience, but he wrote a letter to Heider asking for a job, and he got it.
So I went back to L.A. and picked up my girlfriend and packed a trunk full of stuff, and with about $50 in my pocket, I think that was just enough to get a cheap apartment on Church Street, and I started working at this studio. It was kind of a blur.
Barnhart was assigned to engineer Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's Deja Vu Sessions.
The only person, actually, who introduced himself was Graham Nash. And he extends his hand and he says, "Hi, my name is Graham, and this is my lady, Joni."
Joni Mitchell.
I'm going, yeah, cool. Yeah, didn't expect Joni to be there, but she had just written this great song, Woodstock. And it turned out to be one of the first tunes that they recorded. It was quite a turning point because for the first time, I really got to see an incredible group of talented dudes practically write stuff in the studio.
Well, I came apart, the child of God. He was walking along the road, and I asked him, "Tell me, where are you going?" Mr. told me.
And create these live performances in the room that we're almost ready to go, and then without vocals, and then they got into their vocal take. Crosby, Stills, and Nash did their vocals, and they were very meticulous.
Barnhart went on to record David Crosby's solo album. He worked long hours on Hyde Street, recording the Grateful Dead's American Beauty by day and Track Crosby's If I Could Ever Remember My Name by night.
David would host playback parties. Sometimes we wouldn't do anything but playback stuff. It was the best hang in town. And the who's who of San Francisco music and beyond would be hanging out at David's session and getting high and playing. And so we went through 100 reels of tape in the Crosby session because he didn't care. Tape is cheap. Magic is not.
Barnhart says there were at least two or three songs on Crosby's album that were born out of these sessions.
Well, like What Are Their Names? Was something that David had written out the poetry on a napkin or something in an airplane. And then he took a jam that Phil and Jerry and Yorma and Kreutzmann, the drummer, started working on, and it kind of came together in pieces. And then he got a section where everybody could sing along. These were all bands that tracked live in the room. There wasn't a lot of as much overdubbing as people do today. It was like, try to get with the bands here, try to get it all spontaneous and live.
Barnhart recorded and produced many more albums for David Crosby and other artists like Van Morrison, Jennifer Warnes, and Don Henley. He still produces and records independently from his own home studio in the Bay Area, but he'll always remember the first few years of his career at Wally Heider Recording.
If I want to come somewhere to do a record, this is where I would do it.
In San Francisco, I'm Angela Johnston for Cross Currents.
You can find links to all our pieces on San Francisco's history at our website, kalw.org. And here's another band for you to listen to, Tin Cup Serenade. They'll be on stage this Saturday at our second annual live Cross Currents show at the Oakland Museum of California. In addition to the music, we'll have live performances of some of our favorite stories. We hope you can join us Saturday, 7 p.m. at the Oakland Museum of California, and it's free. Find all the information at KALW.org. Let's be stepping, 'cause my feet can't keep still. I've just got to dance until. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Isabel Angel, Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Alyssa Kapnick, RTM's Konohovs, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Moo, Mary Reese, Stephen Short, Eva Sonsin, Anna Sterling, and RJ Sloan. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.